You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the earth.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, May 12th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And happy 34th birthday to my brother Joshua. We've got a jam-packed show for you today in another edition of the Cannabis Minority Report, a piece of audio you've just got to hear that features Patrice Cullors, the co-founder of Black Lives Matter, and Dorsey Nunn, the executive director of All of Us or None. It was recorded at the Morehouse School of Medicine last month at Drug Policy Alliance's Not One Step Back event, and it was just fantastic. That's coming up in our first segment. Then we'll have time for some drug war data mining. I'm going to try to calm the fears of stoned mayhem on the freeway that Governor Phil Scott in Vermont seems to be suffering from. Then, in our second segment of the day, in the second half hour, we premiere the UK Cannabis Chronicle, the United Kingdom Cannabis Chronicle, featuring Greg DeHote, the chairman of the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. He'll be joining us all the way from England. And we'll round things out today with a radical rant where I introduce you to Trump's brand new Marijuana is a Gateway Drug to Opioids Commission. That's all coming up on the Marijuana Agenda. But first, when we come back from this 2-minute break, we've got the cannabis headline news. Stick around.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House. Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb and licensed by the City of Portland.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the Alcohol Agenda. But a lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Friday, May 12, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. Federal prosecutors should resume the old practice of pursuing the sternest possible charges and longest available sentences for all drug crime suspects, Attorney General Jeff Sessions ordered on Friday, according to a report in thinkprogress.org. The new instructions reverse a memo issued in 2013 by then Attorney General Eric Holder, which sought to radically change America's prison problem through simple changes to prosecutor behavior. Holder had ordered U.S. attorneys to drop the across-the-board tough guy act Sessions is reviving and instead reserve the harshest sentencing enhancements and multi-layered indictments available in the law for offenders with clear links to violent crime and organized criminal syndicates. The aim was to end a common absurdity in American law enforcement, small-time drug busts that lead to decades-long prison terms for people who do not fit the profile of a dangerous, hardened criminal. The old practices revived in Friday's memo from Sessions mean that someone arrested for a small quantity of marijuana could get sentenced to life in jail if they have two previous drug convictions of any kind. One man will determine whether Vermont becomes the ninth state to legalize marijuana and the first one to do so without a citizens' ballot initiative. U.S. News reports that Governor Phil Scott, a Republican, has not said if he will sign the bill, and his spokeswoman, Rebecca Kelly, says it may take weeks for him to decide. Quote, I can tell you we don't expect to receive the bill from the legislature for a few weeks, and he will need to review the bill before making any decisions, end quote, Kelly says. The governor has said he's not ideologically opposed to legalization, but that he's, quote, incredibly concerned about highway safety, end quote. Also headed to the governor is a bill that would expand access to medical cannabis dispensaries and add Parkinson's disease, Crohn's disease, and post-traumatic stress to the qualifying condition list. Vermont Digger reports that Scott's spokesperson says he'll need to review that bill before signing it, too. The New Hampshire Senate has joined the House of Representatives in passing legislation to decriminalize marijuana. Tom Angel at MassRoots reports that by a vote of 17-6, the Senate approved a bill on Thursday to remove criminal penalties for possession of 3/4 of an ounce of cannabis in most cases. Currently, New Hampshire is the only state in New England that has not yet decriminalized small amounts of marijuana. Republican Governor Chris Sununu has pledged to sign the bill. He was tweeting, quote, I want to thank the legislature for passing common sense marijuana reform. I look forward to signing House Bill 640 into law, end quote. The Nevada Senate gave final legislative approval Thursday to a bill updating testing requirements to prove a driver is impaired by marijuana, reports the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Assembly Bill 135 now goes to Governor Brian Sandoval for consideration. The measure eliminates urine samples as a measure to detect marijuana levels that would constitute impairment. Medical researchers said while urine testing can identify whether someone has consumed marijuana, it cannot reliably determine if someone is impaired. AB 135 retains legal limits set in 1999 for drivers' blood content of THC, the psychoactive chemical in pot. Anyone with a blood THC level at or above 5 nanograms per milliliter is considered too high to drive. The Austin Statesman reports that time ran out in the Texas House late Thursday on a proposed law that would have reduced the penalty for possession of small amounts of marijuana in the state to below that of most traffic tickets. A midnight deadline passed without the full House taking up House Bill 81 for initial consideration, meaning it and other House-originated bills remaining on its calendar are now dead as standalone legislation. HB 81 called for Texas law enforcement officers to write tickets for possession of an ounce or less of marijuana instead of making arrests. Under the bill, people issued those tickets would pay fines of up to $250. Current Texas law will continue to categorize possession of 2 ounces or less of marijuana as a Class B misdemeanor, punishable by up to a $2,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Friday, May 12, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Georgia, Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is the Cannabis Minority Report, brought to you by the Minority Cannabis Business Association at minoritycannabis.org. The war on drugs has been called the new Jim Crow, or how it disproportionately polices and incarcerates people of color. As marijuana legalization proceeds, institutional barriers still prevent minorities from fully participating in the new industry. Today, we take a deeper look at these issues in the Cannabis Minority Report.
On this edition of the Cannabis Minority Report, we hear from Patrice Cullors, the co-founder of Black Lives Matter, and Dorsey Nunn, the executive director of All of Us or None, speaking at Drug Policy Alliance's Not One Step Back strategy session at Morehouse School of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia.
Patrice, I think I'm going to start with you, but I welcome others to weigh in, as with any question. You know, and especially I want to raise this question about advocates in this moment of social media, right? And in this moment when social media can be used to pull a world together or drive wedges between people. And I've never seen so much vitriol. And I wonder how, it almost feels as though you don't need an FBI or COINTELPRO program anymore because we got us. And so I wonder what we do and what we are actively doing to avoid the sorts of internal battles in our organizations that movements in the past were really undone by. And so I'm going to ask that question to you and anybody else who may want to weigh in, please join.
Hi, everybody. Hey, it's good to be here. I'm so grateful to be on this panel. Thank you for having me, Asha, as always. I'm an open and out abolitionist, which you can clap for that. And abolition isn't just about the destruction of something, it's about the building. It's about the imagining, it's about the dreaming. And so over the last 30 days, as an intervention to some of what Asha's talking about, I started a 30 days abolition hashtag, and really sharing with people, and our really it's a conversation with our movement. Sometimes the intervention has to start there, about how we actually practice being with each other. And if our practice is about destroying, decimating, isolating, cutting each other out, that's not going to get us closer to where we need to be. If our practice is rooted really in a punitive practice that was taught to us, a punitive practice that punishes people, then we're not going to get closer to where we need to be. And so I invite folks to talk about how you practice abolition. Is it community accountability? Is it transformative justice? But practice it on a daily basis. We live in this place right now, this place that is destroying communities, trying to resurrect the war on drugs, trying to resurrect Jim Crow era, trying to resurrect the war on gangs. And so we have to actually be different. We have to be different with each other. We have to show up for each other. And it sounds simple, but it isn't unless you practice it. And so in this moment, as I wake up every day and learn something, some horror about what 45 has done, that's what I call Trump 45, or what 84 has done, that's what I call Sessions 84. I have decided that what matters just as much as fighting the state is how I love my comrade, how I treat my baby, how I treat my husband, how I treat my family. And that's actually really radical and revolutionary, and that's how I practice abolition.
Let me ask this question, because it is a hard time that we're living in. And Chloe, I may start this with you and see how, if others want to weigh in on this question too. It seems like with, you know, various competing horrors that are occurring right now, how is it that we don't actually wind up competing with one another? Right? So to think about, and others can jump in on that question as well, but it just seems to me that I'm afraid to put on the news every day. I was a news junkie. I'm trained as a reporter. That's the field I come out of, and now I'm afraid to watch the news because I don't know where to get, where to put my attention. And yet here we are, funding in a specific area, doing work in a specific area. And I wonder how you might advise us to remain focused and remain balanced. How we even do that?
I feel others on this panel may be better qualified to answer this question. So it's interesting because right after the election, I kind of, so I've been thinking about nothing other than criminal justice for 13 years, that and like sometimes friends and definitely my family and my children, but that's it. Nothing else. And it took that election to have me kind of come up and be like, okay, maybe is something else required of me right now in this moment? Do I need to be doing other things? And I work at a foundation, so I interact with a lot of other funders. And I was like, okay, what are the needs of the moment, and how can we structure something and get the Silicon Valley people to who I work for to think about, you know, what they need to be resourcing? And it kind of it didn't get very far, and. And I realized after that sort of initial frenzy, I was like, okay, I tried this. I think I'm going to go back to this, where I am, which is really just focusing on resourcing advocates, organizers, directly impacted people, and allies to fight mass incarceration. But to do that in a way where I'm trying to stay plugged in and connected to my comrades working in other areas, but I feel like my best use is to be on that focused level. So for me, it's not actually a matter of, oh my gosh, there's so many problems, how do I stay focused? It was more like, I'm always focused, but I wondered in that moment whether my obligations actually lay elsewhere, and then I decided that they didn't. But I think also, you know, some people are like heads down people, and some people are connectors in a lot of things, and we just have to figure out how to work ecologically together to have mm-hmm. that add up to something big. But I'm really curious what others would have to say to that.
So yeah, so am I. I want to invite other people to go in here, and I'll be completely transparent about sort of what inspired this level of inquiry, was that it seemed to me up until November 8th, we were worried about the murders of black children by police. We were worried about what was happening in communities. And for the first time since we had said black is beautiful, we said Black Lives Matter. And then it seemed like with November 8th that we didn't want to say that so much anymore, right? We didn't know where, and I, you know, that we had, some of us didn't have the privilege, though, right, of not saying that. Some of us still had dead children. Some of us still were at risk. Some of us came home maybe not worried about whether we'd be arrested, but that our boyfriend would, because he's 6'2 and brown and a boy living in Brooklyn, you know? So I just wonder how you know, it's a hard thing, right? Like, how do we stay focused on the things that we need to stay focused on and not have the privilege of saying, today I'm going to care about this issue, or tomorrow I'm going to care about that issue, before we've ever resolved any contradictions?
Asha?
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that I want to say is, if y'all could judge Obama's administration as a blip as opposed to the standard, then you recognize that the arc in which we're traveling is longer than the 8 years of the administration. Racism was alive and well before Obama.
Right.
It's alive and well after Obama.
Right. And during.
And during Obama. You know, I don't want to just exclude that, right? And if I think about, like, in my lifetime, before I even hit 18, I had already been shot at by the police 3 times. So that wasn't unusual. That wasn't an unusual thing. Right now, I'm a proud member of All of Us None, and I'm not the executive director. I'm just a regular member of All of Us None. So every time somebody blow me up like that, I get paranoid because, like, you know, they got a tendency of killing leaders. So everybody in All of Us None, they all co-founders. They all leaders. It shouldn't just be Dorsey. We spread that stuff out, right? You know, and there's several things that I've been working on, and one thing is, you know, how do you make people feel entitled? Because you can feel entitled to be oppressed, and you can feel entitled not to be oppressed. And I think that my job as a person doing organizing is to help teach people to feel they have the right to their full humanness, and they have the right to jam people up. Because you can get into a space where you feel like I was so disappointed after the election. I couldn't imagine how come 53% of white women voted for the groper.
Right.
You know, but I only stayed depressed a little bit. Then I started looking for the other part of that shoe because I was doing a speech and there's 400 people in the room and there was a handful of blacks. And at first I was asking myself this question. Now, why am I... Kids are here, huh? I'm learning how not to cuss. I'm trying to be a more loving grandfather. And I was angry until I started actually getting to that moment where I was counting my blessings. My blessing is that Trump made it impossible for us to deny racism was rampant here. I figured out that the audience that came to hear me speak did not necessarily agree with Trump. Then I figured out I could be getting some new friends because he had been the groper. He had already talked about the calves as being the size of grapefruits. So I thought that I had the possibilities of loving a wider range of people and bringing them into movement in a different way. So at a certain point, I think that some of the stuff that Michelle Alexander talks about is how do you include those disenfranchised whites into the movement? Because somehow they've been able to actually separate them from their oppression by pointing to us as being more oppressed. And somehow we got to include them in a different way if we're going to win. So that was something I got as a result of Obama being elected. I generally would say just screw that group. But you can't afford to do that, at least I can't afford, because at this point, I'm a great-grandfather. So I got to clean up a whole bunch of stuff or else I'm going to lose 2 generations of people to a degree of oppression that I don't think that they're entitled to.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
It's time for cannabis facts about Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The marijuana agenda, like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for a cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
We're very excited about the prospect of Vermont becoming the 9th state to legalize marijuana use for all adults, and even more excited at the prospect of the first state to legalize without a citizens' ballot initiative to actually go through the House and the Senate and pass legalization. Now, it's not everything we could want. It's just a grow and give type of a legalization where people can grow up to 2 mature plants and 4 immature plants and possess about 1 ounce of cannabis. And that's all right. You know, we'll build on that. But as far as I'm concerned, grow and give is just the underground weed dealer's subsidy system. But hey, who's to complain if you're an underground dealer? You've got now free reign to sell just like you were in the past, but now it's harder to get caught. Still, the prospect of legalization is on the table somewhat, as this bill contains the provision for a study commission to study, tax, and regulate for the future. This was a compromise between the House and Senate to finally get it passed. And passed it has, and it's heading to the desk of Governor Phil Scott, a Republican in Vermont. And of course, a Vermont Republican is different than your typical Republican, but still, there's some doubt as to whether or not he is going to sign this bill. And most recently, his spokesperson had said that he's giving it some consideration, and in the past has mentioned that he's not ideologically opposed to marijuana legalization, but is very concerned about the health and safety of Vermonters. And in particular, Vermont's Governor Phil Scott said he's incredibly, quote, incredibly concerned about highway safety, end quote, in regards to marijuana legalization. And we here at the Marijuana Agenda just have to ask, why? Why are you so concerned? Why do these people think that legalizing marijuana invents cars and weed? I looked up the statistics on this earlier today from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health to determine how much marijuana is smoked in America. They ask this year after year. And that's from the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Agency of the federal government and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which administers the fatality reporting system in America, which is how many people die in car wrecks every year. And the monthly rate for marijuana smoking of people aged 12 and older in the state of Vermont has consistently been within the top five of the United States and well above the national average. Last year, it was second. Vermont was second in the nation behind Colorado in monthly marijuana use rate. It's been third. It's been first. The worst it turned out was seventh a couple of years back. It was seventh, but still consistently in the top five for the past dozen years. So it's not as if people in Vermont haven't been smoking pot before legalization could pass. And then you look at the fatality statistics coming out of the FARS encyclopedia. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration reports that out of the 50 United States and the District of Columbia, 51 possible, Vermont ranked 50th in highway fatalities. It's one of the second safest place to drive in America. Now, this is based on a fatality rate of fatalities per 100 million miles driven. So it's not just that Vermont's a little tiny state and Alaska's huge and Texas is huge or whatever. This is per 100 million miles driven. So it's factored in that a smaller state's not going to have as many miles. With that as a given, Vermont is the second safest state to drive in America, and dating all the way back to 1994, has been in the bottom 20 and oftentimes in the bottom 10 as far as how dangerous it is, how likely you are to die driving in the state of Vermont. So for decades now, we've had a state of Vermont that's had the legalization of medical use of cannabis, that's had decriminalization of personal amounts of cannabis, that has had some of the nation's highest rates of monthly cannabis use for over a dozen years, that's had some of the fewest, the lowest rates of highway fatalities over the past 20 years. What are you worried about, Governor Scott? If there was any sort of stoned mayhem on the freeway that was going to happen because of the combination of cars and marijuana in a state, your state would have been one of the first to show the signs of it. We'd have seen some sort of stoned mayhem in the freeways outside in Burlington and the areas around Vermont. It's just not happening because it's just not a concern. In the time in the 80s when we started rebelling against the lax treatment of drunk driving, it was because we had an epidemic of people wrecking and crashing their cars and killing people on alcohol. We have not seen that with marijuana in the 40 years of popular use. And indeed, the most recent studies on the issue have shown that correcting for age and gender, marijuana-using drivers are no more likely to be a crash risk than sober drivers. So, Governor Scott, do the right thing. Sign the legalization bill. Let's get on with it.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's TheSilverTour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at HempInc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from the SilverTour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cannabis Sports Medicine from the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Welcome to the United Kingdom Cannabis Chronicle, brought to you by the UK Cannabis Social Clubs at ukcsc.co.uk, your source for relaxation and reform. Today, we catch you up on the latest news and speak with an expert from the United Kingdom on the latest developments in ending adult cannabis prohibition. This is your UK Cannabis Chronicle.
Welcome to the United Kingdom Cannabis Chronicle. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today for our premiere episode, we have the chairman of the United Kingdom Cannabis Social Clubs, the sponsor of this segment, Greg DeHoat, is joining us. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hey, Russ, how's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Yes, and in full disclosure, we should let everyone know, Greg's a good friend of mine. I met you, I don't know how many years ago it was now, when you came here to the States. 6 years now that you came to the States, and you're a patient dealing with all sorts of issues and cannabis. I got to see firsthand how it improved your well-being. So thank you for being on the show.
No worries, Russ. Thank you for inviting me over in the first place. I'm just saying, I came across your podcast and it was sort of like a beacon in the dark. I was like, here's the knowledge I need to go towards. And I got invited out to the Normal Conference. It was the 40th anniversary one in April 2011. So, yeah, just over 6 years ago, I was in America starting my journey. I've got Crohn's disease. I was given 5 years to live at one point, about 6 months before I came over there. So I was just like, going to do as much as I can, you know, to get healthy. And within a few weeks, I was pretty much walking up mountains with some friends, you know, after eating cannabis oil. And it's, you know, that journey sort of like set me on my path to help set up the cannabis social clubs in the UK. And we're doing quite well. We've got about 120 groups set up across the, you know, England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales, all trying to help change locally in their area. And I've got to say thanks, Russ, because I modeled it off of what you did with Normal and the chapters across the United States, and you know, it really helped me set the path in motion.
Well, you're quite welcome, and it looks as though we'd get to get a little repayment of the favor coming up this fall, this Labor Day here in America. I'll be heading out to the United Kingdom. Tell folks about this festival that's going on.
Yeah, so for the third year in a row now, we're going to be having Product Earth. It's our like answer to Hempfest and Spanibus, kind of all rolled into one. And what we do is we have about 70, 80 exhibitors from across the UK and Europe who are all working in the cannabis industry, either seeds or, you know, fashion or just paraphernalia items. They all come together. They exhibit their wares to head shops and the cannabis social clubs, consumers, patients. I run a seminar zone there, so I run the conference side of things. We have speakers, you know, from all parts of the industry, from hemp to technology, to growing, breeding, and even politics, because, you know, that is a really big issue in the UK. We don't have we do have a medical version legal. It's pharmaceutical, so I'd refrain from calling it medical cannabis. Mm-hmm. It's pharmaceutical cannabis we've got in the UK. But we don't have the right to grow. We don't have any sort of like personal limits or decriminalized amounts. So it's still very much an uphill battle, but we're not asking, we're just getting on doing it, like we saw that you guys did in the States. You didn't have permission to do it, you just sort out what you wanted to get, and that's what we're kind of doing.
Yeah.
I'm
just so proud of the work that you've been doing. You've been speaking out a lot and building the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. I encourage everyone to check them out at ukcsc.co.uk. And the work you've been doing has been fantastic. Tell people the Cannabis Social Club is though more than just a medical thing, if I understand correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is for everyone. You're never too healthy to use cannabis, and you're not too sick to use it either. People need access to it, and they need access now. So we understand people who are already growing cannabis, they're already consuming it, they're already selling it. We just want to put people in a safe space and environment around people they trust, and you know, that have been vetted to come into these private members clubs, effectively, that have been set up just by individuals like ourselves who want to see a bit of change in the area. Fed up with people not being able to go anywhere and socialize with, you know, while they use cannabis, or be stigmatized while they use cannabis. And for me, like, you know, I'm a sick person, but I'm an able-bodied person as well. Like, I want to be able to go out and enjoy myself with other able-bodied people, but I can't go and do that in a pub. I don't really like drinking and getting blotto. I like having a vape or a dab. And that's not socially acceptable in the UK at all.
Yeah, it seems the growth of the Cannabis Social Clubs has paralleled the growth of knowledge in the United Kingdom. And you've been no small part in helping to promulgate some of that knowledge. We've got well-spoken members like Professor Nutt, who'd spoken out and so forth. Give us a kind of a rundown of what's been happening recently. We here in the States, we just went through our 420 celebration. We had the Global Cannabis March took place worldwide. How did that run down in England? Are we getting more support?
We don't do ours necessarily in England. We do it in Wales because we are the United Kingdom. We've held it in Wales for the last 7 years, and while the attendance is sort of like upped and down, it's always had a core followership there, and the Welsh are starting to get out there in their numbers and see that, you know, there is an opportunity to have the Cannabis Social Clubs. It's quite a social kind of city, Cardiff is. It used to be a mining country, so when the coal mines got shut down, a lot of industry disappeared. So there is a lot of unemployment there, and cannabis is something that people grow a lot of over in Wales to supplement their income a lot of the time. So it is an industry that we think definitely needs to come to Wales. There's a lot of people that work there, and we've seen a lot of people that get criminalised for really small amounts, like 50p's worth of cannabis. But at the same time, some people are being busted for 9 plants, and they're going, oh, here's, you know, they give them a caution, they take the plants away, obviously, but they don't get sent to court for it. Other times people are getting sent to court for, you know, up to 9 plants, and then getting a suspended sentence. So people aren't going to prison for small amounts of cannabis or small amounts of growing, but they still see it as a crime. And we want to try and take a step in a different direction. Up in Durham, which is the northeast of England, so Wales is kind of like on the west coast. In the northeast, we have Durham, and Durham have not decriminalized, but they've earned the title of decriminalized cannabis, because what they've done is similar to what Seattle did, is they created the lowest law enforcement priority for cannabis. So anyone gets caught with a joint or a spliff or smoking on the street is probably going to get a caution or a warning, but they're not going to get arrested, taken down the station. If they people who get reported or people who are growing in their own home are not likely to get reported for it. The police are saying, this isn't a crime. If you know they're growing it for themselves, don't bother calling us. It's not worth our time. We don't have the resources or the manpower for it. So while it is based on an economical perspective, like to leave the cannabis consumers alone rather than realizing it's not worth our time because we're not actually criminals, it's still benefiting people. And the cannabis community has taken that as a note to say, all right, well, maybe we need to take a few steps forward to see how far we can go with this. So in that area, we've got two cannabis social clubs that have actually set up. They have, one of them has their own building, but they have regular meets twice a week and then one big monthly session. They're even about to open their own ladies' night, as it's, that's Teesside Cannabis Club, because they see not a lot of ladies or, women come to the regular club nights. So what they're doing is to say, look, we know there's lots of women that want to use cannabis. Come and have a ladies' night, see what it's all about. If you want to join the club, come and be part of it. But we, you know, this isn't just a guy's thing. This is something that needs to be accessible for all demographics. Mm. And just those protests are trying to sort of like get those messages out there, get people more involved with the cannabis community, where they might have previously thought this isn't for me.
Is there an increase in the visibility of cannabis in the UK, specifically in the media? Is there more reporting on it?
Yeah, so recently we've had a story, Callie Blackwell and her son Darren. She medicated her son Darren, who had two rare forms of cancer. He had a leukemia and another form of cancer at the same time. And, you know, no one's ever had that combination of cancer before. He was given cannabis tincture, you know, by his parents. He's managed to, you know, to survive. He was, I think, 11 at the time. He's now 17. That story has just been released. Callie has written a book that's come out called The Boy in 7 Billion. It's gained quite a lot of popularity. A video went up online and it went viral within, you know, the first few hours, several million hits, explaining the story that was on, you know, live TV, TV in the mornings on a show called This Morning. That would have been seen by all the people at home during the day, all the you know, the stay at home mums and older generations that are sitting there watching TV. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing that message. They're seeing those news reporters that they see all the time, telling them, you know, all these stories that they should care about. And all of a sudden, it's one about cannabis. And the presenters are absolutely amazed that, oh my God, this story is real. You're sitting in front of us and they're holding the book up going, you've got to read this book, kind of thing. So that, you know, people are starting to go, wow, this is a story we can live, you know, believe in. And it's similar to how, you know, when Sanjay Gupta came out and started saying,
right,
this is actually real medicine. You know, people have been lied to for a long time. This is something we need to start looking at. We're not quite there yet. The doctor on the program who was after comment on it said, well, it might have been spontaneous recovery. And
sure.
It's like, all right, they gave him 2 days to live. His white blood cell count was zero, and then all of a sudden they started giving him the tincture, and his white blood cells went up. You can't really call that spontaneous recovery, but okay, if you want to say that on TV, you can go for it. ITV, which is Channel 3, BBC, which is the state broadcasting system over here in the UK. They've even been publicising cannabis events. We've had the Bristol Cannabis Club did a march on 420 saying we want our own cannabis social club, which is, you know, really, you know, really good for them to get out there and do these independent protests and start getting local support for what they're doing in their little movement and their campaign. They then followed up at the Cardiff Cannabis March as well. Vice recently reported on our tag plant model. We give out tags for people who are growing 9 plants or less for themselves or for their collective to grow at a fair trade cost. So the bud is about £2 to £7 a gram rather than £10 to £15 a gram. And we're even seeing Californian import at the moment, like gelato and kosher kush and cookies and the sherbets coming over here and selling at £50 a gram of flower. £50 a gram. I know for a fact that these guys are, you know, buying at about, you know, $10 to $15 a gram, which is, you know, about, you know, you know, £8 to £12, and then selling it on, you know, exorbitant, you know, amounts because they can. Yeah. People are buying it, and they put it in a nice little you know, they put it in a nice little pop top with a sticker on it that says medical cannabis, Prop 215. People are buying it. You know, there's even stuff I know people are growing in the UK and now selling it at £800 an ounce. People are buying the California bud for £1,250 an ounce all the way up. So our model of £2 to £7 a gram is quite encouraging and enticing to patients who can't afford that kind of hype weed.
And is this making an impact on the government in the kingdom there?
Well, it's hard to tell. David Cameron had to resign, or didn't have to resign. David Cameron stepped down after the UK decided that we were going to leave the European Union. It's something that I'm quite disgusted in, pretty shame, you know, ashamed that we're doing it. But you never know, we might make a deal with Trump now and become sort of like the 51st state. Yeah, I think, like, you know, we don't know what Theresa May, our new premier, actually thinks. She's just called a snapper general election, you know, randomly, crazily, whether this is just some power play because the left is kind of split at the moment. They don't know what they want, how they're going to get it. People have, you know, there's people voting right wing, they got one party to vote for. People voting left wing, they got three or four parties to vote for. So that bigger section is actually split across less people, and it's not proportional representation. So we don't have a really fair democracy in the UK. But having said that, the Conservative Party, I know there are some ministers that are interested in reform and, you know, are trying to encourage people to look at it, the economical benefits of reforming. It will be a Canadian kind of licensed producer takeover if that happens, I would imagine. But the Liberal Democrats are also saying they want to legalise and regulate cannabis in their party manifesto, which is obviously, you know, mirroring what they've done in Canada. I've seen the Liberal Democrats in the UK, you know, speaking quite highly of that. And I've also seen about 20 ex-Liberal Democrat politicians in Canada now working for licensed producers in Canada. So I can imagine they're probably looking at that model as well, going, maybe I can get out of politics and get into weed. But the good thing that they've done in the UK, they're not just talking about licensed producers having control of the market. They are talking about cannabis social clubs having access to being able to provide, medicine and product for people. It's not just going to be some kind of corporate grab. So that's something to look at. Having said that, I kind of encourage people to vote Labour in this election. It's not something I've done before, but if you are from the UK, you're listening to this, I think we do need to vote tactfully on this one. And Jeremy Corbyn of the Labour Party said that he would legalise medicinal cannabis. He's not in favour of legalising cannabis across the board or regulating it for all healthy adults and consenting adults as well. But I do think that it's a step in the right direction, and B, we need to get the Tories out because they are cutting public services, killing disabled people, and shutting down the NHS, which is our private health, our public healthcare, and that's not on really. We need to keep and reserve those kind of things. They make Britain what Britain is.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
It's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death. total war against public enemy public number one.
Ten federal criminal penalties for 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
And now it's time to meet Donald Trump's Marijuana is a Gateway Drug to Opiates Commission. That's right. Donald Trump has done it again. This opiate overdose crisis has reached epidemic proportions in the United States. In 2015, the CDC reports over 33,000 people died from prescription and illicit opiates like heroin, oxycodone, and fentanyl. We consume 80% of the world's opiate painkiller supply, and more of us consume opiates than tobacco products. In response to the epidemic, U.S. President and the reincarnation of Benito Mussolini in Cheeto form, Donald Trump, has appointed a special Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis. Note the drug addiction part, because if you don't think the Trump administration isn't going to use the latest dangerous drug scare as an excuse to ratchet up federal interference in all drugs, including cannabis, you've forgotten American history. Still, such a commission could be a good thing if it diligently and objectively reviews the science on cannabis and opioids. Recent research shows that access to medical marijuana reduces opiate prescribing, opiate use, opiate addiction, opiate-related car crashes, and opiate overdose deaths. But that's a mighty big if. We've already heard from Attorney General and Sling Blade Hobbit Jefferson Beauregard Jeff Bo Sessions on the science. Quote,
I see a line in the Washington Post today that I remember from the 80s. Marijuana is a cure for opiate abuse? Give me a break. That's the kind of argument that's been made out there to just almost a desperate attempt to defend the harmlessness of marijuana or even its benefits. End quote.
Well, reviewing the members of Trump's new commission doesn't provide much more hope for enlightenment on the marijuana versus opiates issue. Like Sessions, who believes strongly that marijuana is a gateway drug to heroin and is, quote, only slightly less awful, end quote, the appointees to this commission also believe the gateway theory that even the DEA doesn't promote anymore. Let's start with the appointed chairman, New Jersey governor, and every Jim ads before picture, Christopher Chris Christie. He recently railed against state politicians fighting for legalization, calling them, quote, dopes and, quote, crazy liberals who want to, quote, poison our kids with marijuana, end quote. Politico reported he claimed, quote, teenage marijuana users are 10 times more likely to become heroin addicts by the age of 24, end quote. Next, we have OxyContin-addicted, pill-impaired, car-crashing, not-sobriety-tested, given-a-ride-home-by-cops former Rhode Island Congressman Patrick Kennedy. He told the Washington Post that, quote, marijuana destroys the brain and expedites psychosis. It's just overall a very dangerous drug. In terms of neurobiology, there's no distinction between the quality and types of drugs that people get addicted to. That's why they call it a gateway drug. Addiction is addiction is addiction. End quote. If Kennedy's name sounds familiar beyond his famous family, it's because he's the co-founder, along with Kevin Sabet, of Project SAM, the nation's leading anti-legalization organization. In their most recent white paper, Marijuana and the Opioid Epidemic, Separating Fact from Fiction, they claim there's, quote, insufficient evidence that marijuana access will reduce, quote, opioid use and overdose deaths, end quote. Comparing the idea of using marijuana to treat opiate abuse to doctors who, quote, once sought to treat alcoholism with heroin and heroin addiction with cocaine, end quote. Project Sam also still proclaims that, quote, 99% of people who are addicted to other drugs started with alcohol and marijuana. So indeed, marijuana use makes addiction to other drugs more likely, end quote. Then there's Massachusetts governor and former job-slashing premium hiking healthcare CEO Charlie Baker. He was a vocal opponent of marijuana legalization in the Bay State, claiming that legalization would, quote, make it easier to introduce young people to drug use, end quote. Legalizing marijuana, Baker warned, quote, would put our children at risk and threaten to reverse our progress combating the growing opioid epidemic so this industry can rake in millions in profits, end quote. And what commission on opiates wouldn't be complete with without a former staffer from the Drug Czar's office and Mrs. Garrett on the Facts of Life doppelganger, Bertha Madras? She believes, quote, the more frequently marijuana is used, the more likely you are to become addicted to other drugs, end quote. And that, quote, lessons we have learned from opioids are directly applicable or generalizable to marijuana, end quote. The only person that he's appointed to the commission who's not crazy is North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You say you're free, you're planet, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking. You take a seat, you're planet, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking. You take a seat, you're planet, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking. And it goes down smooth.